RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
Len Cook, CBE, is a professional statistician who was government statistician of New Zealand from 92 to 2000, national statistician and director of the United Kingdom Office for National Stats, and Registrar General for England and Wales from 2000 to 2005. He served as Families Commissioner in New Zealand from 2015 to 18. And we've asked Len Cook to come on our program to discuss two things. The story that we've been mentioning a few times in the last couple of days, census set for major changes, going from the traditional census survey forms that we're familiar with to an admin data first approach. And then the other thing we're interested in finding out about is the Data and Statistics Act. So Len Cook is with us. Thanks for coming on. Really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you, Paul.
Okay, well, let's start with the second one first, the Data and Statistics Act. What does that term admin data mean in your understanding?
Well, it means the records that are collected by a government department that it stores from its transactions with people. It could be the police, the tax department, social welfare, health, and those records are generally kept so that next time they deal with you, they know firstly it's you, and they've already obtained that information from you once.
So the culture has been basically siloed information, use for the whatever institution or authority or whatever that it has direct meaning to.
That's right. And it's generally very hard to change, to the extent that most of the content is legislated in law. Unlike a statistical survey, the government statistician can generally alter the questions next time it's done. With an administrative record, it's up to the minister or the department head to decide whether they would take your change on board. And often the general reaction will be, we have the authority to collect information that's important for the administration of our laws, not yours. And so if you ask a lot of other statistical information during, say, an interview with social welfare or the tax collection, people tend to get a bit irritated, and that why are you collecting this? It's not your business.
But those silos added together is a powerful information tool, I'm thinking.
It's quite a powerful tool. It doesn't cover a lot of aspects of people's lives, like their families, issues of disability, how they actually operate when they're not under the observation of statistical record of these administrative records. So it's a really different mix of things. Where it's got a real strength is that, you know, if you look at places, there's a lot of information we know about small places that's going to be really important in climate change and infrastructure development that we don't collect at the moment. So there's a lot of information that we could build together and learn a lot more about small places from administrative records.
In your understanding, what changes to then the established stats landscape, let's call it, does this act make?
It creates an interesting constitutional challenge, which both Sir Geoffrey Palmer, Maurice Williamson and I were highly critical of, in that we don't believe it should be possible to delegate to anyone without any qualifications a role as important as the government statistician. And the government statistician in New Zealand is one of the most highly trusted public servants. And the idea that you can delegate it to anyone else is really something that Sir Geoffrey, Maurice Williamson and I were violently opposed to, as were people like the civil liberties community.
So anyone delegated really has the power, or the observational power, let's say, of the chief statistician or a statistician. Is that what you're telling us?
That's what the Act says, and that's what we were totally objecting to. I've never known it anywhere in any other country of the world.
Oh, okay. So we're the first, are we?
Well, hopefully we're the last, because we have an easy life here. And in some countries, like Fiji, fired its chief statistician about 18 months ago because the prime minister didn't like one of their reports. The Greek statistician of 10 years ago is being harassed by the government because he decided to actually make more reliable Greek statistics at a time when the government didn't want it. So I think we're a bit naive in New Zealand about the sort of pressures we might face here, and when we look at the sort of pressures that other countries do. I think in 1981, the Argentinians dropped their statistician out of a plane.
Oh, dear. Oh, we don't want that to happen. Okay, so you said we're kind of naive, but this is pretty obvious, isn't it, where this could go?
It certainly is, but it's had no effect so far. So I think it's possibly because all the people involved are well aware that there is quite a concern amongst people interested in constitution or in the just general trust in government, that there is a greater risk with that type of change.
Do you think it's fair to say that trust in government has, recently actually taken quite a big hit, and that people are smart to question that trust now?
I think there's clearly been a decline in terms of fewer people filling statistical surveys. There's a lot of distrust with vaccination and things like that. And I wonder some of it is whether we've created a government full of spin doctors who really forget the fact that most of us are intelligent enough to see what they do and how they think. And so we no longer see, half the sort of top public servants that you would have been seen visible in the 1990s, people like Dame Margaret Baisley, now apart from the police commissioner and the occasional director general of health, we really do not know who our public officials are. And I think that's quite an important issue.
It's a very good point. Okay, how does, if we're the first, how do, and you've worked in other jurisdictions, very high level, how does they handle their stats compared to this then?
Well, it's interesting, the British, who had a really low level of trust in their statistics in the 70s and 80s and 90s, which is why one of my predecessors was an Australian statistician and the other came from out of the office and I was the third from outside the system. What the British did in 2007 is they set up an independent statistics authority, which challenges both the statistical officers and also people that use the statistics, like even the British Prime Minister. And it creates an independent body where it says, if you're going to produce statistics, you need to be challenged. And if you're going to actually say that they vindicate your policies, you need to actually use them correctly. So it's a really interesting arrangement. It's one of the first in the world. And I think generally it's got a lot of relevance to statistical officers in a number of other countries. But certainly I would promote it for New Zealand. The difficulty we have, as you know, is that we do have a public sector which tends to limit the number of ways it can be challenged.
Yeah.
And I think that's happened over the last 30 years. And we're just lucky we've got an Auditor General, people like the Ombudsman, who really do much more challenging now than even the ability of agencies to challenge themselves.
Yeah, with no increase in budget too, apparently.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay, so I'm just mapping this out. So the chief or whoever is authorised to delegate, statistician, decides to delegate that power to, the Ministry of Health.
Yeah.
Does that mean someone, the top person in the Ministry of Health, is like the chief statistician now and can decide what to do with, let's say, my health data? I don't know if they would, but is that what that really means, that power means?
Well, they still have to comply with the Statistics Act protections in confidentiality and how the information is used. So, and I think one of the arguments that that Sir Geoffrey and Maurice Williamson and I had was that actually it's impossible for anyone else to fulfil the obligations of the government statistician because they have other obligations that conflict with that independence. So it was almost like a no-brainer to not do it, but for some reason or other, it's been seen as a wonderful thing to do.
Presumably you submitted on it, obviously.
Well, too, right.
Yeah, because you're the man.
Yes.
How were they received? And what have you heard fed back to you? Any response to what you said? Any sort of argument for these changes made to you that made any sense?
Well, the minister at the time made a statement that we're not going to need surveys anymore, so we ought to get on with it. I did make a submission to Parliament. In fact, I sent two, and I had a whole 5 minutes in front of them.
Okay.
I think one of the difficulties we have is that we don't have a lot of MPs who tend to think particularly deeply about these sort of issues. And so, I'm a bit like Chris Finlayson when he says you shouldn't be allowed to be an MP until you've spent 15 years in a real job. And I think the difficulty with the stats bill is it really went through without any serious consideration. Sometimes ministers are simply cheerleaders for their departments. And I think this was a case where that was true.
Are the ducks being lined up for this other issue that I mentioned, story that has people talking now, and that is the changes to the census, because you'd need that data collection ability, that delegation authority, wouldn't you, to bring back or to bring together all that data to not need a form or people filling it out? And that's a lot of data.
Well, I think you've got, firstly, a lot of that data is already available and Stats use it. But I think it's important to, I think there's two broader issues that we have to face up to when we see what these proposals are. Firstly, New Zealand's in the middle of a population storm, you know, with low fertility, high life expectancy, volatile immigration, and actually the populations that we've never measured well before, Maori, migrant populations, are now a very large part of our population. So, we've, you know, for example, in the next 20 years, 45% of the population increase will be people 75 and over. Now, that's going to have a massive increase on care industries, how communities function. We'll probably double the number of the people that are in care homes, which is about 43,000 now. So these are huge issues for how the state, the market, and the community get together. We're not going to manage that increase alone by people's pensions. So, for example, and we're not really addressing that. You know, virtually the nearly three quarters of territorial local authorities in New Zealand in the last 10 years had more people in them retire than join the workforce. So, again, we're seeing massive population change in New Zealand. And my concern is that whatever change we make, it needs to be seen in the context of those, that population storm, which is in the middle of us.
Yeah. If you were in the job still now, you'd be pushing back against this, I take it.
Oh, I won't answer that. There's nothing worse than 75-year-old former chief executives sounding like Dad's Army as to what they actually like
to
do.
Don't panic.
No, my attitude is my capacity to challenge more how would you make the decision rather than what the decision should be. For example, we're going to spend $200 billion on infrastructure around New Zealand in the next 20 years. Have we got the statistics for it? The Infrastructure Commission says that our population projections and estimates are not up to scratch. You've got the Commissioner for the Environment, Simon Upton, saying, actually, we don't know at all enough about how climate change will affect different places in New Zealand. So I think when we get proposals from the Stats Office, we really have to analyse them in the terms of those two key questions rather than some kind of this can replace one tool with another.
In your role, your past role, you must have seen patterns in the data that you absorbed and looked at over the time. I'm just curious, you know, what sort of jumps out sometimes?
Can I tell you, for example, the growth in the Maori population in the last 60 years means that the Maori age distribution is now much like the non-Maori age distribution was in the 60s. And if you think about it, that means that the Maori population at the moment is much richer economic potential than the aging European population.
That's interesting, isn't it?
So yeah. There's some really interesting. The advantage in having, you know, 150 odd years of a census is that you can go back and you can see where the generational shifts. For example, we're putting fewer young men in prison now, Maori and non-Maori, than we did at any time since the Second World War. Their imprisonment rates are now more like their great-grandparents than their parents. My generation and my children's generation had a much higher chance of being in the clink than my grandchildren's generation.
That's positive, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And yet we're not really very good at, I think we sort of lose the plot in looking at the sort of real findings and narratives in our statistics as we become quite mechanistic in how we report them.
Yeah, well, I was just thinking this is a technocrat's dream come true, isn't it? Sort of using this kind of platform to do this sort of work. If the delegating authority power is taken out of it, maybe you'll tell us if more needs to come out. Would you be comfortable with this approach?
I suppose, can I put it this way? Administrative records are like fossils. And unfortunately, unlike what most archaeologists find, they never find a skeleton because they're all independent of each other. That we have little control over their quality and we have little control over their continuity. For example, in 1986, when Roger Douglas deregulated foreign exchange, we lost our ability to produce balance of payment statistics for 5 years.
Wow.
So these things are quite important. On the other hand, when he introduced GST, our quality of our economic statistics improved. So there's a sort of some things help and some things don't. So if I were a sideline observer, I would say I've got a lot more questions to ask than possibly were in the department's consultation document.
Right. I don't think I've seen much reporting of it or much talk about it from a political level. Is that strange? This is quite a big change, isn't it, really?
I think ministers have, I mean, since the last minister of statistics we had who really understood the job was Maurice Williamson, the last few have really just been departmental cheerleaders. And as a consequence, they forget that they're not only representing their political party in what they seem as a really minor role, they're the sort of representative for Parliament of how does this department get held to account. And the job of parliamentarians is holding departments to account. And my experience, for example, in Britain, is that I was held to account every bloody day. But New Zealanders are far too docile about how they hold their government departments to account.
Yeah, a bit sleepy.
A bit too trusting and a bit too polite. And we've become a country where we're not too keen on feisty interaction. And I think certainly if you're a permanent head in Britain, you get used to people being quite demanding, insightful and challenging, and often a damn sight brighter than you in challenging what you do.
You got to be on your game, huh?
Yes.
Yeah. And access to this data, to sum up, researchers I'm reading here must be vetted and demonstrate a public interest purpose to access the clean admin data in secure controlled environments without internet or mobile phones. And also, the Privacy Act, I think you touched on that, provides protections, but also allows for the sharing of information in good faith without legal repercussions. Can we really trust that, though, do you think? Can you put a percentage of trust score on that or something? Because our listeners will be suspicious, let's say, of that, if they're suspicious of anything.
Can I say one important check you have to have is what do they do when something does go wrong? And for example, in the 2001 British census, we had 200 census forms were lost because a cleaner took them home. Okay. And when I heard that, I simply said, we collect data with the authority of the public, get the bloody cops and get the stuff off them, which we did. And I then wrote to every individual whose forms we lost. I then got a review that we published and I produced a news release. And my argument then wasn't, you know, we're in trouble now. It was when we have a 2011 census, if there's another stuff up like this, we can get people will know that that's how we react to it. So yeah. I think, things can happen. And it's really how do public servants respond rather than actually the fact that things, Winston Peters' whole challenge of the public service was never really about public servants making cock-ups. It was actually vitriolic about the hiding of them. And I think that was one of the great services that Winston did to the public service in New Zealand. I think that as long as the department documents every access, which I believe they do, then you know what's happening. And there's quite a high interest community in what's prepared. And the other thing is, as long as they obligate people, which they do, to publish in the public domain something that they prepare, I think that they are the sort of criteria that you need to continually be vigilant about.
Okay, and just to talk about the most recent census, it did seem that people were a bit resistant to, fill them out at least on time. They had armies of people out chasing people up. Is that way of doing it, does it still work or is it now redundant?
You know, in a traditional census, which wasn't quite followed through, you get a list of information from building permits and everything of where houses are. The first job of the enumerator then is to go around everywhere and see if there's any missing dwellings. Now, that stage wasn't done this time, but it's a really important check because official record. And then having done that, you have a very tight process for receiving records back and publishing them. And I think, in a way, we probably had too much confidence in the first lot and they admitted what the administrative records could tell you about where people were. You still need to validate every piece of information that comes out of an administrative agency when it says it's talking about the whole population.
And that's a physical process, potentially?
Physical and it costs, but it means the people doing the enumeration then know a lot more about their area.
Yeah. Okay. Len Cook, really interesting talking to you. Had an interesting career.
Eh? Oh, yes. I've been lucky for a wee lad from Dunedin.
Yeah, okay. How do you fill your time now? Do you keep looking at numbers and stats?
I do. I take an interest in, I'm really interested in this sort of population storm that we're in the middle of and how it affects public policy. I do take an interest in whether we know enough about how we use the data. I mean, for example, if we're going to have 350,000 people 75 and over, many of those will be disabled or have some disability. Are we really going to manage with three-story apartment blocks with steep stairs cases
Good point.
The prime focus of our dwellings? So part of what I enjoy doing now, which I couldn't really do as government statistician, is look at what are the policy implications of behind these statistics that you're missing out.
Len Cook, statistician, thanks for coming on our radio station and explaining all that. We appreciate it.
Oh, thanks, Paul.
Right now, free speech is under heavy attack in New Zealand and overseas, with governments constantly devising new ways to enforce censorship. To make sure you never miss the critical news and breaking stories you rely on, join the RCR mailing list today. Get connected now at realitycheck.radio/email.